vision. Your paradigm is about to shift at the intersection of fact and reason. You're entering Kingston Country.
I'm Dan Kingston, and you're listening to the Dan Kingston Podcast. Joining the podcast today is Frank from the popular Let's Be Frank YouTube channel. Over 8 million views, tens of thousands of subscribers, I think like 36,000 subscribers on YouTube. He has political live streams on YouTube. You can catch that Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 10 p.m. And a new prayer meetings, which are so impactful and something I really want to talk about today because it's really important. Those prayer meetings are 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And daily, and also Sunday and Friday in the evening, if you want to catch that at 10 p.m. So I'll repeat this, and also I'll put it in the description of the podcast, so don't worry, you don't all have to memorize it if you're listening out there. But welcome back to the podcast, Frank. Thanks for coming back.
No, absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on Kingston Country. I appreciate the hand of friendship that you have given me.
Oh, yeah. No, it's awesome that, being on your show and having you come on this show, it's really community building. I'd appreciate it. And yeah, welcome to Kingston Country. Frank, did I get your info right with your schedule?
Yeah, you did. The only thing you missed was Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time was the only one that you missed.
For the prayer meeting, and now this prayer meeting is really interesting. Yeah. I mean, you're a political guy. You've done, a really, really impactful political videos and also political live streams. But this is something new, where you're leaving politics aside, actually, for these prayer meetings and just focusing on the power of prayer. What inspired you to start doing that? Because it's a big change, is it not?
Yeah, and it is a very big change. And just a little bit of a backstory on that is, I've been doing YouTube now for, I'm in my third year. And, it's always been political content on my channel. And, people kind of maybe thought, my religious background and stuff, because I would sometimes talk about it, but not in very, not very deep terms. But I acknowledged it. And so it was right around the time the president called for a national prayer. It was over 3 weeks ago that happened. And he called for a national prayer for everybody of faith, to kind of pray for our country in a singular moment. And I liked that. I liked that idea. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if we could bring that to YouTube, the platform YouTube? And I started to really become convicted of it because I started to really think beyond that, because for me, if I'm going to be talking about God in that manner and provide a platform for people to come and open up, because these people open up that they come onto these prayer meetings, they really let their prayers out there and it can be very personal stuff. I had to really examine myself before I did this. I said, what am I doing? If I'm going to do this, if I move back to the political arena, which I do still kind of flip between, I don't want to damage that prayer meeting because I think it's so important right now, especially this time. And I mentioned to you before we went on, at the start of this, I'm now bleeding subscribers. I don't know whatever reason, what is that for, but I'm moved thinking that somebody out there needs this right now. And I don't care about the ramifications at this point, as far as losing subscribers or losing monetary value, which does hurt a little bit because this is my full-time job. But I think it's greater than that. I think right now where we currently are as a country, I think people need this, and I'm willing to provide the platform for it.
People come in those prayer meetings, and I've been in them, and there's a live chat if you don't know about YouTube out there, but you can do the live chat feature, and people come to you with their prayers, like you say, really personal things that you then write down all these prayer requests that people have, and you combine it with a verse from the Bible, but it's really impactful and profound how you take these prayers and you're they're real. You know, it's very personal. It's not like you have a large following, but it's not like a million people are listening in each moment. You know, it's a community of hundreds that are chatting in real time. So you really can like talk to people, and they can talk to you, and the community can come together. So it's a really beautiful thing about YouTube. And it's interesting, you've been losing some subscribers, and I wonder, is YouTube censoring you? Because not only are you a patriot, but now, you know, you're professing, you know, the word of God. And I don't, is that dicey for YouTube? Because most of them, let's face it, they're probably atheists over there. it could be based on how they act sometimes. But, you know, I commend you for that, and you can see how important it is. So definitely, if you're listening out there and you think this would be meaningful to you, you can join those daily at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's Be Frank is the channel.
And what I've discovered in these prayer meetings, Dan, is the craving for more, for more of this type of content. Because, you know, I have people on the West Coast that come into these prayer meetings like you. You're in the West Coast. That's 6:30 in the morning for you, right?
Right. Yeah, I was
early. So it's a bit early for some people. You know, they want to attend. And I commend those people that can make it to these live streams. You know, they'll catch it on replay, and they'll make comments in the comment section. You know, they'll type out their prayer request in the comment section after the video is played. Mm-hmm. And I go through, and as you mentioned, I write all of these down. I have a whole collection of 3 weeks worth of prayers that I pray over every single day, my individual prayer time that I have, because as anything, you have to prepare yourself for these types of shows. Just like you prepared, like today, you prepare before you come and do a show. You're always preparing. So for me, I have to prepare. I have to make sure I'm reading the Bible. I got to make sure I'm reading the context behind it. I started off with just a verse, Dan. I just did a verse. I would just do one verse. And then as I was doing the verse, I felt more to talk about the context of that verse. And it was somebody in the comment section said, wow, that's very profound that you're actually diving a little bit deeper into that verse and bringing it into context, because sometimes a lot of people just throw a verse out there and it's a feel-good verse. They don't give any context to it. Mm. And so what it's become now, and these things were only supposed to be like 20 minutes, Dan, I'm nearing an hour now every prayer meeting because I give context into what we're talking about and how that applies to our everyday walk in our life, especially right now. And it can be challenging sometimes as you're reading, you're trying to pray about what needs to be said. And that's probably my biggest challenge. And then adding these additional prayer meetings, that's three additional ones on top of the five I already do. It's definitely a work of love.
But is it hard not slipping back into politics?
You know, it can be very tough. I've been, as I mentioned at the top of this, I've been very convicted in that manner. And if you go to my channel right now, you'll find very little over the last 3 weeks, very little content outside of the prayer meetings. I have just my regular political streams, and those, you know, those are three times a week. But just my normal video output has been close to maybe one in the last, probably I've done four, I've probably done about five in the last 3 weeks. Mm. And that's a huge drop off for me because I was doing like five a day.
Right.
And so I felt convicted the way I cover things. So I'm trying to balance that. And that's the challenge for me right now. So I don't feel comfortable, I guess, at the moment, putting out video content that I'm not, that I feel like it's going to be a detriment to what I'm trying to promote as far as prayer meetings.
Hmm. So
you think, because I can't be that person out there going to town on the Democrats or the liberals or the media and just really calling them out or even getting, you know, and trying not to get nasty with them, because that, you know, in turn, I think that really damages your own testimony when you try to go back to these things. You're like, well, did you see Frank earlier today? Man, that guy, he flew off the handle. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to avoid, and trying to balance that righteous anger in a more confined space.
Is this because of COVID-19, because of the anxiety and the real suffering people are having, you know, from the disease, but also just from the ramifications of the disease, economic and social and, You know, all these things are having an impact, and not to make light of people on the front lines who are sick with the disease. Is this a temporary, you know, when COVID goes away, do you think you're going to go back to politics? Is this, you're kind of called in this moment, or do you see this as a long-term thing?
I've been praying on that. And I told my wife the other day, it was last week. I told my wife, I was talking to her and I told her, I said, I feel like I was prepared for this moment for me to be used. And then because all of this is what I've been building this personality of myself. It's not really a personality. It's just me, but being comfortable in front of the camera, being able to talk in front of a camera, being able to, connect with people and this type of platform. I said, so maybe all of this time I've been being prepared. I was being prepared without me even knowing for this time that we're currently in right now. And I'm one of those voices that need to be heard at the moment. When this is over, yeah, more than likely I probably will kind of come back into more of a politic arena. But I don't think I will truly ever really now abandon this prayer meeting, because I have seen how much this actually means to so many people now at this point.
It does. Yeah, I see it too. It's really impactful. And I think people need it. People need to have that faith and that hope, especially during a time right like this. So now the reports that there's empty hospital beds right now. And there's a question I read in the New York Times, an opinion piece. So this is not like a far right wing opinion piece that, or anything like that. It's just in the New York Times saying, where are all the non-COVID patients, like the heart attack patients or the stroke patients? We're not getting them. There's so many empty beds right now. And it's just kind of wondering that that's what the opinion piece was wondering. Where are they? Have you heard any reports similar to this?
You know, Dan, that's the first I've actually heard of that report there, but I have heard similar reports. If you follow some of these stuff out that's out there, I've read an article. I'm trying to remember if it was I want to say it was Breitbart. So it was on the right wing side, but it basically stated that doctors are being told by hospital administration that any death that may be linked to COVID, they have to mark as COVID. So maybe the guy died of a heart attack, but he had some respiratory issues. So we're going to market COVID. So I think this kind of ties back into funding. This is an opportunity to get federal funding. So how do you get federal funding? You have to make your case look much worse than maybe what it is. So you start reporting things that are not COVID related under COVID. And so you can get that federal money. I saw a meme the other day that said it was pretty funny, because it really talked to this issue. Was, you know, this guy got hit by a car, he died of COVID. You know, that is maybe that's why we're not seeing all these beds being utilized. And I'm not saying there's some nefarious a motive behind it. You know, we're not going to care for these people that have heart issues or whatever, because right now nobody's allowed in these hospitals, right? Family members aren't allowed into these hospitals at the moment, correct?
Right. Yeah.
So isolation. Anything could be happening in these hospitals. I don't want to think ill of our doctors or our nurses that they would do anything wrong, but there's no eyes inside of these hospitals right now. I'm just saying.
No, it's true.
One of those things that you know, you mentioned, yeah, we have maybe these empty hospital beds, but why do we have these empty hospital beds? And why do we have such a spike in death in COVID?
Right.
You know,
there's unintended consequences going on right now. And, you know, people don't plan for these. You know, what is the side effect of pumping in all this, disaster relief money or this kind of thing? And you prioritize COVID at the expense of everything else. What's the unintended consequences of that? Are people just being, you know, diagnosed under the sun, everything with COVID, when they die of something else? Are people afraid to call 911 because they've seen on the mainstream media that the hospitals are overrun and they're going to get infected if they go to the hospital? So are people, you know, dying in their homes or waiting until they're very sick to call 911 and go to the hospital? There's all these unintended consequences, because we're just hearing kind of the same kind of mainstream media fear-mongering. That's brings me to my next question about, you know, this fear-mongering we see is actually leading to neighbors calling the police on neighbors, right? And you get a real crackdown on individual liberty, it looks like. You call yourself, you know, Freedom Channel a lot of the times. The Freedom Stream, that's what you call it, right?
The non-prayer
meetings are the Freedom Streams. And so you've been really on top of this from the beginning, talking about, you know, how we're kind of giving up our freedom. Can you talk about that? Do you think we're making a mistake giving up our individual liberty?
You know, Dan, I do on many, many reasons. One, just as you pointed out, was, you know, we have instances where neighbors are calling on neighbors, you know, because they feel they may be violating a social distancing rule or gathering too many people. And it's interesting because I was on a Facebook page, and I don't really typically get too political on Facebook, my personal Facebook, to be more precise. And it was a county page. It was our county news page. And somebody had posted, you know, it makes me really upset. These people are still gathering at these places and stuff like that. And I get it. I understand the fear because it's been pumped in to everywhere. Everywhere has been pumped into fear.
Right.
And everybody's fearful. So these people, you know, reacting to that fear are nervous about seeing a group of people now. Mm. And I remember the post said, it said, I wish the police would come and arrest these individuals that continue to come and gather because it's deemed for national safety. So this is, and I've discussed this on my show times. So this is basically a stepping stone. You know, we had our 9/11 where we gave away some of our freedoms. This is the next stepping stone. What are we willing to give in the name of safety, of personal safety? What are we willing to give to the government? What are we willing to allow them to take from us? And some of it is federal government, but it's more so, if you drill down, it's more city, county, and even state now at this point that's really taking the power and saying, yeah, we're going to go ahead and institute this no matter what. And now you have people kind of, you know, tattling on each other. And for me, personal freedom is a big thing for me. That's something that I really like to hang my head. I talk to my kids about it all the time, and I'm very, you know, and at the same time, I'm married to a nurse. My wife has the opposite thinking I do because she's in that healthcare field. She understands. Their mind goes to the worst case scenario all the time. So I understand my wife's point of view, but she kind of agreed. I think I'm starting to get to her a little bit. She kind of started to see some of the ramifications on this.
Mm. Is she safe, and what is she seeing at the hospital, if I may ask?
Well, she's on a COVID floor. Ugh. So she's there. She's there with the patients, you know. She told me, she's like, they look, you know, the ones that have it look really, really bad. Mm-hmm. They have like almost a grayish tint to their skin. Mm-hmm. The ones, some of them.
Does she have protection? Has the PPE stuff?
Yeah, when... The hospital she goes into, as soon as she goes in, they fully, depending on where you're at on the floors, you know, they fully give you new. They have to change their entire uniform. Whatever they're coming in, they have to take that off and they put a new uniform on. And they put in with personal protection stuff and everything like that. And they go to work and they have different level masks for different situations on the floor. But they have to wear a mask regardless the entire time they're out there inside the building. And so when they finish up, then they strip all that stuff off. They've been trained of how to take this PPE stuff off, and then they change back into their normal clothes and they're allowed to go back home.
Has her experience, what she's telling you about what she's seeing, has that impacted, I know that you've kind of impacted her view on individual liberty, but mm-hmm. as her what she's seen impacted your view in terms of how serious this disease is?
Well, it has, in the sense that now that she's actually around it and she could, you know, I don't want her to, but she could possibly catch something and bring it home to the rest of us, right? The rest of the family. And now we have to think a little bit more proactively. And this goes back to the personal responsibility, thinking proactively. Okay. We told the kids, hey, we can't have anybody over. We can't see grandma and grandpa right now. And cause we don't want to get them sick unintentionally, but this is a personal responsibility that we're taking upon ourselves, right? And not so much, even if this wasn't government mandated, And my wife said, hey, we probably shouldn't go out and see anybody because of what I've been exposed to. We'd be like, okay, we would understand. And we would take those precautions.
What are the orders in your area right now? Do you have like actual mandated orders to stay at home?
Yeah, we do. State of Florida is under a stay-at-home order right now. We are only allowed to go out to the essential businesses if we need it. And in some cases, I think I read a story yesterday locally where somebody was arrested and taken to jail because they were violating the stay-at-home order. They weren't at either of the areas. They were just pulled over. And I guess whatever the person said to the cop, or they were not being very cooperative at that point, they arrested that individual and took them to jail. So, I mean, I don't like that aspect of it at all, Dan. I don't like to know that I could be pulled over and be questioned where I'm going. Mm. I don't like that.
Yeah, show your papers. You know, it sounds like Nazi Germany over there. That's what they're doing in France. You have to show your papers to prove you have a right to be on the street. And, you know, everybody has to, every community, every society, every country has to deal with this in their own way. But the American way is, I believe, self-sacrifice and individual liberty. And I don't see how this is constitutional. I'm not a constitutional expert or a scholar or a lawyer or anything like that. But does this seem constitutional to you?
You know, same thing. The same thing you just said. I'm none of those things. But from what I'm viewing, I don't think it is. I think we're in some dangerous territory right now, Dan. And I'm not saying that to be fear-mongering as far as, you know, I don't want to be like the media fear-monger, but this is something that could impact us the rest of our generations moving forward. Hmm. You know, this isn't just about right now. I mean, yeah, it's happening right now, but the impact of ripples will be felt after this is finally over. When is it going to be over, Dan? Is it zero cases, because we know that's never going to happen. Just like the AIDS epidemic we had back in the 1980s. Did we close the country down because of AIDS, or do we still have AIDS cases out there? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they wrote the Constitution, they had infectious disease back then. It was a lot worse. You know, it's not like this is a surprise to the founding fathers.
Correct. Yeah. So in my view and my understanding, and I've mentioned this plenty of times on my own show, freedom is messy. And yeah, you know, if you want freedom, you know, there are sacrifices, unfortunately, you know, and not to make light of anybody passing away because of the virus, but did we shut down the roads because one person died on the road of a car accident? No, the roads continue to stay open.
Right.
You know, and that's the logic. I know that's apples and oranges, but that's basically what we're doing. You know, we're trying to prevent death. Death's going to happen. Death's coming.
Right.
We can't legislate against death.
We've accepted all the highway deaths, and in some ways, people have become way too okay with it. You know, the self-driving cars. Actually, if we could build cars that could prevent those deaths, you know, that you could save. I don't know how many people die. Tens of thousands of people die on the highways. You don't hear about it. You could prevent those deaths.
No.
You could prevent them. You don't hear anybody yelling about that. So. You know, some people do. I mean, obviously there's people that make causes for, you know, have been hurt by drunk drivers and all this kind of thing. So there are people shedding light on that, pointing a light on that, which is important. It is a good comparison, actually, I think. Has this surprised you that this has been a big surprise for me, that the Democrats, after accusing Trump of, you know, being a tyrant and a dictator, and is he ever going to step down? And, you know, all these horrible things they say about Trump, and now they want him to declare martial law. Now they want him to take all the power, you know, that he could possibly have. And it seems so weird. Like, for so long, they were worried about him taking too much power. Now they literally want him to declare martial law and do the national lockdown that would give him all the power in the world. Is that hypocritical?
It is. Do you know what that reminds me of, Dan? I mean, we don't have to go too far back in history. I mean, we just have to go back a couple centuries. Rome. Mm. What happened with Caesar? You don't remember Caesar? He didn't want to be Caesar, but everybody thrusted that power upon him. He, you know, become the Caesar, become our all ruler. We need somebody to protect all of us. Mm. I feel like maybe, not calling President Trump Caesar, I'm not calling him a dictator or anything like that, but how much can somebody be tempted with power before they finally say, yeah, how about I take on this power? Right. You know, and I pray for our president every single day. Every single day on the prayer stream, I pray for our president. I pray that he seeks guidance and seeks strong counsel and strength and stuff like that, because if this country falls, there's no hope anywhere else in the world. Hmm. You know, you can't really turn and say, what can we do, what we do here in this country, anywhere else? We can't.
Can't turn to China.
Exactly. Yeah, I urge your listeners, you know, to pray for this president, whether you like him or not. You know, and if you believe the Bible, you know, it tells us in there that we must pray for our leaders, you know, our governing bodies, you know, because they are being tempted every single day with power. Every single day, this man is being tempted with power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dan, I don't know about you, but if somebody's going to tempt me with power, I don't know how long I could resist.
Yeah.
The temptation of power.
It's true. We're human.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are very human. Yeah. They were upset because he wasn't declaring, you know, enforcing, like, I think the state of Wyoming for not instituting a stay-at-home order. What's the population of Wyoming, Dan? Like 500,000?
It's ridiculous. It does not, it's not sensible. You know, it's just not logical, I guess, because you're looking at the spike in New York. The rest of the country is not having the same situation. I guess there are spikes in Detroit and LA, different areas, but not in the, there's areas that aren't having a spike, right? I guess, okay, last question for you, Frank. I really appreciate all your time on today's show and your insight and wisdom. The last question, I guess, is related to the lockdown. I mean, do you think that, are you concerned that Trump is going to be pressured into that martial law, into that lockdown? Are you concerned by that? It sounds like you are. What do you think the chances are that we're going to enter some kind of national lockdown before this is all done?
You know, I am nervous about it a little bit. I will concede to that. It's in a minority. I'm not over concerned with it, but the one thing that did kind of give me hope about President Trump was in a recent press conference he had. And again, the reporters there pressuring him to declare a martial law or to a national stay at home order, as they call it. That's code for martial law, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's all about language. It's all about language. And it was by Wyoming and some other states. And you know what he told them? He said, we have this thing in this country called the Constitution that separates states and the federal government. And he said, I love that document. I love that document, the Constitution. You know, and I respect that document. I highly urge you to go back and read the separation of powers, as he told the reporters. And in that moment, I said, and I chuckled to myself. I said, wow. I said, the cojones on this guy, you know, basically calling these people out, not knowing, you know, our country's founding, our documents or anything, and wanting him to continue to pressure this guy into calling a national thing. And he falls back to the Constitution. He falls back to the Constitution and say, I cannot do that because the Constitution says I cannot do that. It's the state's right to institute these types of things. And I'm like, that's brilliant.
That is.
So in that moment, Dan, it gave me hope that, you know, I do believe he is getting the correct counsel right now that's around him. And, you know, as far as long term, I don't think we're going to see a national lockdown, or I don't see this, you know, I don't want to put a date on it, but I don't see this lasting past our summer, you know. And many people said 2 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, or 2 months. And, you know, it's more looking more like, if you looked at China's numbers, I know China's numbers aren't accurate, 100% accurate, but if you look at the way that things happened from the first case to where they're not really reporting very much now, again, those numbers could be disputed, but it's about a 4 month period. So if we apply that same type of model to what we're currently seeing, when did we first really start looking into national lockdown or states locking down and stuff? That was back in March?
Yeah.
So we looked April, May, June, July. We're looking at maybe possibly July of this finally maybe concluding, if we're going based off of that type of graph.
Yeah, I think you're right. And thank God that Trump's in charge and not Hillary Clinton or any other Democrat. We already would have hundreds of thousands of deaths. We'd have the borders would still be open, and they would use this as an excuse to keep the country shut down for years, most likely. Thank you, Frank, for your wisdom today, joining the podcast.
Before I go real quick, I just want to make one last point, is that, you know, I encourage your listeners and anybody that listens to this podcast, you know, look at being self-sufficient. Look at internally. Look to your neighbors. You know, this is an excellent opportunity to reconnect with our communities, our local communities, in a very, very special opportunity that we're getting right now that we can look to become self-reliant again. You know, you don't have to have a whole lot of land or anything like that, but, you know, grow a freedom garden. You know, those were popular back in, or victory gardens, excuse me, victory gardens. That was very popular back in World War II. If you guys remember, every, especially over in Great Britain, you know, the government encouraged their citizens to grow their own gardens to help relieve the food supply. But isn't it a great feeling to know that you could be self-sufficient on your own little property and be able to grow some of the stuff that you might need? You're not going to be able to grow all of it. You won't be able to raise cattle and stuff like that in every situation, but to be able to supplement some stuff is a great opportunity to kind of go back to our roots, our grandparents' roots, the ones that survived the Great Depression, that knows the hardships, and we can really pass this on to our kids. This is an opportunity for us to pass this on to the next generation, so we don't lose the self-sufficient means that what we became as Americans, because we were self-reliant. So I encourage your viewers to do that. Your listeners. And, you know, I'm going to start a series on my channel. I'm actually going to start a garden from scratch and document it and allow my community to follow my, my gardening thing.
That's a great idea.
I live on about 5 acres. So I got a little bit of space to really kind of experiment with.
Hey, that would be a really great, helpful thing. I think it's so true. We got to be more self-reliant as individuals. And also, I think the country's realizing we got to be more self-reliant. We can't depend on China anymore for everything. So yeah, starts with us, the individuals, the community, and the country. And, I think maybe there's a silver lining that can come from it, this crisis. That would certainly be it. Again, thank you for your time today on the podcast. You can, check out Frank on his YouTube channel, Let's Be Frank. I mean, it's really popular, over 8 million views. And so check it out. It's good stuff. But the political live streams are Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 10 p.m. And the prayer meetings are daily at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And there's more. I mean, there's Sunday and Friday prayer meetings, Wednesday prayer meetings. Just go to his channel and check it all out. Shouldn't they just go to your channel and they'll see everything, right, Frank?
Yeah, they go to my channel to see everything. Now, okay. I have a whole list of the times and everything like that.
And they'll see me there too, because sometimes I'm on the show. So definitely check out Frank. It's really fun, and you might see me as well. So thanks again, Frank. Come back anytime.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for the opportunity.
Kingston Country. You've been listening to the Dan Kingston Podcast.